is Chick Flick Fix. I'm Julia Scott.
And I'm AJ Knox.
We watch chick flicks and rom-coms and decide if they need fixing. Can we make them better or can we make them weird? And week two of Sanctuary, we're talking about 2 weeks' Notice from 2002. It's written and directed by Mark Lawrence and stars Sandra Bullock and Hugh Grant. Mark Lawrence also wrote Miss Congeniality and Forces of Nature, which Sandra Bullock was in.
Okay.
And he wrote music and lyrics and Did You Hear About the Morgans, which Hugh Grant was in.
Okay. Music and lyrics, I get that. That connection checks out. Although that's, aside from Miss Congeniality, that's the only other one of these I've seen.
And this is not just that, like, it is kind of a, hey, it's that guy from That Thing vehicle, because the guy who plays Hugh's Grant brother was also in Four Weddings and a Funeral. Meryl was Miss Rhode Island in Miss Congeniality, and then Jason Antoon was in Music and Lyrics as the failed lyricist who was just angry and dark.
We just watched You've Got Mail the other day, and Miss Rhode Island is also in that as the other employee at the bookshop. I love that I've unintentionally had a Miss Rhode Island January just in the last week of watching these three movies.
I approve. So this movie was going to be shot in Toronto, which a lot of movies are, but Sandra Bullock, who also produced it, was like, this movie is about New York City and about, like, preserving New York City, so it should be made in New York. And it was shot entirely on location, and apparently did a lot for the economy after the attacks of September 11th, because they, you know, the cast and crew just, like, needed a lot of surrounding services. So in honor of that, the mayor of New York named December 11th, 2002, 2 weeks' notice day.
Oh, okay.
Which is cheesy, but, like, I like that. And I like that Sandra Bullock was like, it's not just set in New York. It is very much about New York and, like, the magic of New York and Brooklyn and all of these, like, old buildings. And I'm sure you, having worked with small community theaters and community centers and all that stuff, kind of felt that.
Oh, yeah. Like, the Save the Community Center feels like there needed to be a ski race at some point in this movie. But no, like, that's a real thing. This, like, when you're up against these overwhelming forces, and the theater I work at is in a little beach town in San Diego, and we're not at threat because we have a good relationship with the city, but everywhere around us these, like, condos and modern buildings are going up, and obviously we're not open because of the pandemic, but I've gone up there a few times just in the last 9 months, and every time I go up there, there's, like, a new building or a new construction, and it's changing so fast. So I totally get that.
Wikipedia has had a wonderful field day in the past, like, 2 or 3 days here. There are three items in the trivia section right after each other. The first one is, both Hugh Grant and Donald Trump, who plays himself in this film, later went on to portray world leaders with varying degrees of success. However, Hugh Grant, whose role as prime minister was well received in Love Actually, did not go on to incite an armed insurrection.
Oh, it's so good.
As of January 2021, Donald Trump is the only cast member of 2 weeks' Notice to both attempt a violent overthrow of the American democratic system and get banned from Twitter in the same week. And then Donald Trump, which nobody has gone in to fix, wait, I said Wikipedia, this is IMDb, is the only member of the cast who has been permanently banned from Twitter for encouraging an armed insurrection. And I feel like this, I kind of love that weird, tiny, petty activism of editing Wikipedia and IMDb, where it's just like, he is a famed dickhead. Like,
yeah. Well, and he loves, like, his online presence is everything to him. And so to just poop on it a little bit is great. I love it.
And also, like, Hugh Grant has never incited an armed insurrection.
Yeah, I love, like, there's just something kind of beautiful happening with that, even though our democracy is on fire and things are terrifying. Anyway,
so you had not seen this before.
Nope, I had not seen this.
I'd forgotten, because I think I've, like, maybe seen this twice, but I'd forgotten that it is both a lot more charming and a lot more annoying than I remembered. Like, it didn't make much of an impression on me, but I'm like, oh, I both like and dislike this more than I remember more than I would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, it is one of those movies. I was like thinking about like summarizing it, and I mean, we'll do that as we always do, but like so little happens.
Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to tell how much time it's set over.
Well, I think the majority of the film is set over the course of 2 weeks, but it also feels like a year.
Yeah, but because also like before she gets to the point of wanting to quit, how long is that? Because it could be a week or it could be a couple of years, and it's really hard.
It does some title cards. It's like 4 months, 3 months, six mm-hmm. months. And it like, I think it's supposed to be like roughly a year, but roughly a year also sounds like a really quick time to be an indispensable asset to your employer. But maybe she's just that good.
Or she's indispensable compared to the Bambis and Bunnies that have right. been in that position up to that yeah. point. So okay, summarizing this movie, what is this movie about?
Meet Lucy Kelson.
Hey, that's my coffee, you jerk!
Oh, sir, I'm so sorry. See, I thought you were needy.
She has a law degree from Harvard.
You're my brilliant chief counsel, who's always honest with me.
Well, then, honestly, I think you are the most selfish human being on the planet.
Well, that's just silly. Have you met everyone on the planet?
And an eccentric billionaire boss.
Congratulations on the baby.
What baby?
Maybe you should check with me before you talk.
What baby?
Who's driving her to the edge.
Hello?
I just felt like a bit of a chitter-chat.
You are pathetic.
All right, so Sandra Bullock of the titular Sanduary fame plays Lucy. We are introduced to her along with Miss Rhode Island and some other dude as they're trying to stop the teardown of a building, and she is hugging a wrecking ball, which I'm like, how did she get up on that wrecking ball? Like, they had to lower that wrecking ball to the ground, let it sit there for a few minutes while she climbed up. It all seems very convoluted.
Did you not watch Ocean's 8?
I should have watched it before just to get a sense of her thieving skills. Her acrobatics.
And I love that her friends come to very literally, like, peel her off this wrecking pear-shaped ball. And then they lay down on yoga mats. It's a good commentary on, not that I'm, like, disparaging activism, not at all, but it's, like, a very specific kind of activism, and I love that.
Yeah, but yeah, so they lie down to protect this movie while they're lying down. Her friend's boyfriend proposes to her. They start kind of making out on the ground, and then they get arrested for stopping this, I guess. And then we meet as
public nuisance, I'm assuming.
Yeah, and it's weird because when they lay down, I feel like they were all just in like their normal clothes. They were clean. And then when they get out of the police station, they're all filthy. And I'm like, what happened in that police station? Was the intention they, like, demolished the building while they were standing there and they got dusty and dirty from that?
I assumed that it was just, like, they... because the cops show up and that they're just dragged away and, you know, try to do the baby octopus thing where you just try to slip out of the grasp of, in this case, daddy cop. And so they were just, like, dragged all over the dust on the ground.
All right. I'll buy it. Then we also meet Lucy's parents, who are also activists, and they tell her that this billionaire real estate mogul, playboy guy, George Wade, which to me, I kept because there's a big W on everything that he builds, and it's Wade. I kept thinking like Batman. My mind kept going to Batman because it was so close to Wayne. But yeah, so they tell her that this big real estate developer is going to be tearing down the community center where basically they grew up in Coney Island. And she decides that she has to do something about it. So she goes to meet him, which is very easy, which I feel like would not be that easy for somebody in his stature.
And it's really funny because she's standing there and she almost looks like she's handing out flyers. She isn't. She has like a file of info. And my mind just went to the big rock guy from Thor Ragnarok. He's like, you know, I tried to stage a revolution, but I didn't print enough pamphlets.
Oh, God. Yes, that's exactly what it is. So she goes to me. Also, this is a qualm I have about this movie. Hugh Grant is playing this billionaire, you know, name on the company, name on the towers kind of guy. And he's like mingling in the kitchenette with his employees. And I'm like, that wouldn't I just don't see that happening. Anyway.
See, the thing is, I could see it if he was really just the name on the building. Like, because then, like, his work would also be to maintain the relationship with their staff. Because they talk about, like, it's a really good place to work. Everyone, you know, likes working there. There's good benefits, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it does feel, though, that he does actually do some stuff.
He does work somehow.
Yeah. Because he could be, like, if he was just the figurehead, I could see him being, like, he schmoozes on all levels.
Yeah.
Or he just thinks work is boring. I don't know.
Yeah. Either one. All right. So, yeah. So she meets him to discourage him from tearing down this community center. And again, I just love that this is, like, save the community center. It is, like, first draft of the script, and it just stayed in. And then he discovers that she went from Harvard. She went to Harvard Law School. And so he basically offers her a job to replace his, I guess, his personal assistant?
It's all these lawyers who have gone to Saint-Tropez Law School and some sort of online law school. So he has had what sounds like both a personal and a business lawyer, because she has to. And it's really funny because she talks about, like, all these different places she's worked, and now she works in legal aid. And I didn't realize until later, but it looks like it's the same legal aid building as in Beaches. And I'm assuming it's not.
Oh, my God. But it's just like,
but, you know, you just have this, like, vaguely Brooklyn bottom floor, big windows place. And I just, that was really sweet to me somehow. Even if it's not a reference, I was just like, we have these idealists with long brown hair.
Yeah, so yeah, I guess it is like his lawyer, but it's also, she's doing everything for him. So she decides that, hey, I'm going to take this job because I could, it's kind of unclear, but it's basically like keep him close and kind of discover what's happening and then be able to kind of like step in and guide him. And
but they also kind of make a deal that she will work for him and he won't tear down the community center.
Right.
And also that he also says something about, like, we have all these pro bono buckets of money, so, and you can use those to do all this other activist-y stuff, but actually be able to pay rent.
Yeah. So she kind of goes along with this, and even though her parents don't agree with it because she's working for the enemy.
For the man.
Yeah. And so then we get this, like, quick little montage of seeing her over the course of, you know, maybe a year, year and a half, I don't know. And she's, like, totally indispensable to him. Like, he is relying on her for everything, so much so that at her friend's wedding, we got proposed to at the very beginning of the film, she's standing up there, she gets a message from him that says it's an emergency, and she straight up walks out in the middle of the ceremony, and she has her work bag with her, which I think was, like,
and she has
kind
the
of a funny
sound
touch
on her phone.
Yeah, I mean,
I kind of expected her to say, when he says, like, why did you have your phone on? I almost expected her to say something like, because when I didn't, you sent, you know, the Mounties after me to see what I was doing and help me decide on coffee.
Right, exactly. So she walks out on her friend's wedding, which they really glance over the rest of the movie. Like, it does not become a sticking point. And I have a feeling if I were her friend, that would be a sticking point. But she goes to see Hugh Grant, and she's like, what's the emergency? I walked out of my friend's wedding. What's the emergency? He goes, you walked out of a wedding? And I just love how incredulous he is. Like, he's like, why would you do that?
And she's like, we went over what constitutes an emergency. But I have to say, I kind of, and I mean, this is skipping a little bit ahead maybe, but I like that, at least the way they paint it, he doesn't necessarily, like, make her his personal assistant, because she's not, like, doing errands. She's not.
Right.
She's more of, like, she becomes his right-hand person. Like,
right,
he trusts
his, like,
her.
His confidant, his, yeah.
So, and so he's gotten into the bad habit of not just using her for that during the workday, but, like, they're close all over, and he forgets that there are boundaries between, like, work and life.
Yep.
And I wish they could have developed that a little bit differently, because, like, thinking about it, I realized, like, well, that's, you know, they've become friends and that's where the love grows from.
Right.
But there's a little too much annoyance with it. Like, if we could see it escalate, like, we were friends, we trust each other, because we skip kind of straight into, I don't get to do my job and I don't get to have a personal life.
Right. And we get some glimpses. Like, we get the phone call at 2 a.m. from the bar where he's, like, trying to call her just to, like, because he's hitting on some woman. He just wants to talk to her instead. So you get these, like, little glimpses of...
Which kind of feels a little bit like when Harry met Sally, of, like, who do I want to talk to right now? Just the one person.
Yeah.
But I think with her friend, because I can see it also, like, because it's not just that he is demanding things of her, but she's gotten into the routine of being there for him. And I think her best friend probably just knows that she is someone who gives 120% no matter what it is. Like, she's a little bit nutty in her activism. She's probably an amazing friend, but mostly maybe, like, when the chips are down, because she doesn't have that much time because she's always saving something. But, like, she is someone you want on her side. So she is like, well, she doesn't understand any boundaries. She will always help. And I think, yes, it is a completely assy thing to do, to A, have your phone on, B, not, you know, disconnect the call when it's coming, and C3, I forget which one I was using, just like leaving the wedding. But I could kind of see her friend just being like, well, that's Lucy, which isn't necessarily a good thing either. But it feels like they've been friends for so long and been at all of these weird, like, save this endangered duck, save this library, you know.
Yeah,
that stuff.
They get it. But yeah, we do get that glimpse during this little montage section of the ways in which her, you know, personal boundaries and personal life are kind of subsumed by his needs and his requirements.
And another good thing there is he says, like, I used to be able to make decisions without you, and now I can't, which I think is also, like, a good little hint at, like, I mean, we obviously don't know if that's necessarily true, but, like, she has become indispensable, not just, like, to his work life, or just, like, he has gotten so used to having her to trust and as some sort of wall to throw things at. I get that. That sounds wrong. But, like...
I get it.
But I kind of like that he says that, because, again, that says that it needed to be developed more, but it is, again, trying to do something with that. Like, this is a friendship that has grown. He's not just, you know, a boundaryless asshole to everyone he works with, necessarily. And, like, he is friends with his driver, for instance. Yeah. Like, he has people
they
around
play chess
him
and stuff.
Yeah, and I could see, I forget if he says something to that effect, but basically where it's like, there are so few people around him who don't want to be around him for his money.
Yeah.
Probably. So it's like, you know, he has the driver and he has her, and both of them are, like, unimpressed by him. And I think that's a really nice thing to have, probably, when you're super rich and on the cover of GQ. I wouldn't know.
Yeah, I will never know. but yeah, so after this wedding fiasco, she goes and helps him pick out a suit, because that's what he's been paging her about, the emergency. And she puts in her 2 weeks notice. And she starts looking for other jobs, but everyone won't hire her because he has called them in advance. He's called, like, everybody in advance and told them not to hire her, which I'm like, dick move, dude, just so that he can keep her on, because he doesn't know what to do without her. So they decide that she can leave as long as she helps hire a replacement.
Yeah, hire and train somebody.
Yeah, hire and train a replacement. So this is where that, like, 2 week window goes, like, okay, is this becoming...
Which is weird, because he says, like, you know, train your replacement for a couple of weeks, which could be, like, you have to stay on for a month.
Yeah.
And also, this is a very wasted opportunity for a montage.
Oh, it would have been a perfect montage, a training montage of, like, a bunch of different ones.
Yeah, because they have the interview with the woman, Polly, where he congratulates her on her pregnancy. Classic scene. But I was like, that's where you have the, you know, like, we're trying to hire a nanny scene, right?
Yeah.
We're trying to find a lawyer, and, like, all these women who are applying, which would be funny.
Yeah.
Or men, but then he won't entertain that idea because he wants to annoy his brother.
Yeah, exactly. So they end up hiring a woman, June, who shows up without an appointment.
And they call her June Carver, and I cannot stop thinking June Cleaver, right?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. I was like, leave it to Beaver. I was like, why? I don't know why, but, like, I could not get that out of my head.
And there we have another kind of wasted opportunity, because that the June lady is played by Alicia Witt, who is a gorgeous woman. And when she first comes in, they have her like she has this, you know, scraped back bun, no makeup, very simple clothing. And they try to play her up like she gets vampy once she gets the job. But they only signify that with like her hair comes down and is a little curled. And I'm like, I've seen Alicia Witt in full on makeup and she is banging. But I feel like they needed to decide if she like did a switcheroo or if she's just, you know, maybe a little, you know, has kind of poor judgment and starts hitting on her boss, because there's this weird conflict between her and Lucy that there's so many things in this movie where I'm like, you just need to make a few things more obvious, guys.
Yeah. Well, and it's the same thing they do with Sandra Bullock at the beginning of this movie, which is like the Sandra Bullock rom-com starter pack, which is, you know, dumpy apartment.
Ill-fitting skirt.
Yeah. Like hair, kind of messy hair, and Chinese food. Like, that is the Sandra Bullock, that is to me, like, the Sandra Bullock, like, starter kit for every rom-com. At the beginning of this movie, she orders a ridiculous amount of food, and I'm like,
do we know that, though? Because I, like, it occurs to me, because she's sitting there with just, like, a couple of containers eating, and I'm like, you know, number eight could be, you know, three small spring rolls, or it could be, like,
well, they do the joke of, like, yes, no, this for is one. For one.
It could be, you know, it could be a big order for one person, but it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, if she's ordering four things, that it is enough for four people, right?
I mean, I've definitely done the order the week's groceries from one Chinese restaurant thing before, where you're just like, I got $50 and I got a busy week, so I'm just going to order a shit ton of Chinese food and I'll eat it all week long.
And also, like, Chinese food is nice to have a, I don't know, like, this might be because I always grew up, like, we had Chinese food family style, where we ordered a couple of things and then everybody shared everything.
Yeah.
So, like, in my mind, you eat a number of different things when you eat Chinese food.
Yeah, you eat, like, a little bit of the orange chicken, you eat a little bit of the beef or broccoli, you eat a little bit of the chow mein, and then you, by the end of the week, it's just all in one thing, and it's just a mess, and it's delicious.
Please subscribe to our new podcast, Pandemic and Panda Express, wherever you get your podcasts.
So they kind of do the same thing with Sandra Bullock earlier. So anyway, so June Carver, joins us, and when Hugh Grant sees her, it's like immediate, like, ooh, ooh la la, who is this hot lady? And then we get, of course, the conflict between the two of them, and it never really manifests itself as like a huge butting of heads, but it's just this like simmering little medium conflict in the background.
Do you, because they say that she graduated from Harvard, we know that she's younger because she read the stuff that Sandra Bullock did in like the Law Review and stuff, and I can't quite figure out, like, is she just freshly graduated, which would make her what, like 26 27?
That's kind of what I was getting.
Yeah, because they talk about, like, she doesn't have much experience, so I'm thinking, like, okay, so she did, like, an internship for a year or two, which also makes it super icky to me. I know I harp on about age differences, but here it's also, like, age difference, there's a huge power imbalance.
Yep, the power imbalance is the big one, too.
Yeah, she's brand new, like, onto the job market-ish. I could totally see her being like, hey, you know, not even connivingly, but just being like, you can be attracted to someone who is, you know, rich and powerful. But he should know better.
Yeah.
Like, and find your Bambis and bunnies somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, they end up going to a big fundraiser for a children's hospital or something like that. Or a children's organization. And honestly, like, I've been to a number of galas, and my theater hosts a gala every year, and we try to keep it, like, fun. When my theater does a gala, we usually do a theme. Like, the last one we did was Grease themed, because we had it in a high school gym. and it was really fun. People came in costume, but then you also get all these donors who are like, here's $10,000. It's like, wow, all right, cool. And you're in jeans and a t-shirt. But this looked like a fun idea, because everyone was, like, dressed elegantly with one article of clothing that was goofy or ridiculous.
Yeah, like circusy.
Yeah, and I'm like, I like that. Like, that's a fun way to do a gala.
Yeah, like, the huge tie is really funny, and you don't see it at first.
That's a weird Windsor knot in his tie, and then it pans out, and you see it, like, goes down to his knees. But then at this, so two things happen at this gala that really kind of tug at the heartstrings.
The dark moment, sort of.
Yeah, there are two really dark moments. The first dark moment is...
For a very specific value of the word dark.
Yes. The first dark moment is that Sandra Bullock overhears that he has decided to tear down the community center after all. And so we get this, like, conflict of, like, you promised me. And the second dark moment is that Donald Trump is in this movie. And... Hugh Grant goes up to him and is like, he's like, hey, Donald. He's like, hey, George. And they have this little exchange about his new counsel, his new person, June. And it's this weird thing of like,
I'm going to steal her from you. And it doesn't feel like they're talking about professionally.
Right. They talk about like her qualities and her ambition and her drive and her loyalty and all these things in this like 30-second conversation, and Trump is like, well, we'll see about that, implying that he's going to, like, I think try to, like...
Poach her.
Poach her, but given everything we now know about the pussy grabber-in-chief, it's such an awful, creepy conversation. I just friggin' hate it, and I was like, can't they just go back and edit that out of the movie? They should.
Yeah, because they mentioned Trump, because I'd forgotten that he's even in this, but they, like, very early on, they're talking about a project. It's like, no, Trump has the inside track. And it's like, it's both funny and very not funny.
Yeah.
And then he shows up at that party. And it's funny because he always represents what's wrong with the world. But in this movie, he also kind of represents one of the major flaws of this is, like, you know, an irresponsible reprobate who has money that he hasn't earned himself. Not charming 20 years ago, not charming 4 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. Like, his whole deal is that he's very much the face and he has all this money.
But also at this gala, there's talk of they're going to shoot somebody out of a cannon into a vat of ice cream or something. And then once we get to the end of the gala for the scene, it cuts to like a long shot. So you just see like the entire gala kind of in miniature in the corner, and you hear the announcer saying, and now we're gonna fire him into the ice cream, and you hear a little pop.
He says the ice cream has been put out, now we just need the toppings.
Yeah. And you get a long shot, and then you just hear like a pop of a cannon, and you see like a tiny little like ice cream explosion. And I was like, that is a good version of that joke, though. The doing it from a distance is so much funnier than it would be if you were watching it up close.
And for me, because I always get stuck on the practical details, where I'm like, but it has to be like more or less melted ice cream, because otherwise that would really hurt. So why not just have cheap whipped cream?
It was probably cheap whipped cream. Let's be fair. A custard pie is always just a big pan of whipped cream.
Yeah, I started thinking about A, that, and B, like, the poor intern person had to, like, scoop out giant metal buckets of ice cream into this vat thing that the cloud lands in.
Yeah. So then George and June head back to the hotel where George lives, and they're going up the elevator, and there's a lot of sexual tension, and there's another old couple in the elevator, and she's getting off on her floor, and they start making out in the elevator, and then the old couple's like, excuse me. As they rightfully should.
And he says, I own the hotel. Your breakfast is complimentary. And it's like,
which I thought was kind of a funny little. But yeah, so they go up to his penthouse, and he and June start playing strip chess. And then Lucy comes in to drop something off. And it's like, oh, awkward, awkward. She leaves awkwardly saying that she's going to go have sex, too, with someone else.
Who is in her bed waiting. He's right. From Canada. Like, you wouldn't know him.
And I'm like, okay. We get that you guys have this like romantic tension and that neither of you have said anything, and maybe you don't even realize it until that moment, but like, I don't know. It felt weird to be like suddenly pull out the jealousy card in this moment. So she ends up leaving and going to work for another organization. And even though now she misses him, he comes back, gives this really heartfelt, perfunctory speech about, you know, all the things that he values about her, and it's the, your
and stereotype. Includes the classic, like, this thing is a little bit annoying, but I love that about you too.
Yeah, exactly. And then he also says, like, I'm not going to tear down the community center. I realize I've been wrong. You've made me change my ways. All this kind of stuff. And he leaves, and the other employees are like, are you going to chase after him like you should in a rom-com? And she's like, oh, okay. And so she chases after him, and they finally kind of like declare their feelings for each other. And then he tells her that he's also resigned and that they're going to have to share a helicopter with another family, which I'm like, haha, funny, but also fucking 1% jokes. I hate him. And yeah, then we cut to they're at her parents' apartment, and she's ordering more Chinese food, and he is just astounded by how small the apartment is. He goes, I could walk across this apartment in 6 steps. Look at
me. It's a good thing your parents aren't here. We wouldn't fit. And it's, I find that scene weirdly charming.
I did too. I liked it. It was like a better ending than the actual, because it's like, it's like a little postscript to the ending. And I liked it better than the actual like rom-com ending.
Yeah. Because I like that. You know, it's not just that she gets to, you know, order for two now, but right. also that just, like, he's doing this, like, wonderfully charming, confused, rich person, you know, like, semi-putting on an act, but also kind of not.
Yeah, kind of actually flabbergasted.
That people live in these yeah. tiny conditions.
And yeah, and that's 2 weeks' notice. An inconsequential nothing of a film.
Mm-hmm. All right, so, I mean, the trope is a little bit of... you know, organized woman cleans up reprobate, and a little bit of, you know, friends to lovers, we didn't realize yeah. it kind of yeah. thing. How do you feel about the main couple?
I mean, well, we're introduced to Hugh Grant at this like pediatrics fundraiser thing where he's being honored, and he makes like 5 jokes in a row. And then somebody's like, what's your take on pediatrics? He goes, well, it isn't only just about feet. And then they're like, there's a confused look. And then he goes, and then he like, I'm butchering this joke because I forget it. But he adds a little like, he one-ups his own joke to like double down on like the, no, he doesn't say like, I'm just kidding. I know what pediatrics is.
He says, I'm just kidding, and then doubles down.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, so he's a jokester. And then he has, like, a handful of, like, dad jokes throughout the movie. Like, throughout the first probably 20 minutes of the movie. And then that characteristic about him goes away.
Well, it stays a little, but it only shows up in speech moments.
Yeah.
But, and I'm kind of wondering if she's been trying to knock the dad jokes out of him throughout this movie.
So that's my thing, is like, at first I was like, oh, okay, this is going to be like a one-liner movie where Hugh Grant is like this guy who thinks he's really funny and his jokes are like not that great, but like kind of charming. And she's going to be kind of the tight-laced, and it is kind of that. He stops making jokes and she kind of stops being as tight laced. So like the kind of the qualities of the characters seem to kind of dissipate or like meld a little bit mm-hmm. together, because she kind of also gets a little bit more frenzied and wacky a little bit. And their defining characteristics kind of go away pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I end up just kind of not caring about the conflict between them, or not really caring that they get together. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, again, like, you have to give it a little bit of like, not just the benefit of the doubt, but like doing your own work of like, well, you know, they're affecting each other. She is relaxing because he probably takes her to do fun stuff, and he is becoming less of a ne'er-do-well because, you know, she's straightened him out. But we need to see that.
Yeah.
The same as I was saying, like, we need to see that they are also friends. He's not just annoying her.
Right.
Because, like, I like her. She's, you know, she's mm-hmm. a little bit of a stereotype. And him, I'm just like, he needs more actual charm and less smarmy charm, because I'm not falling for him, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And in a lesser version of this movie, she would have like a harsh bob.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you could just picture the type of like vibe they're going for. And I just don't think they lean in on either one of them as hard as they could. Yeah, I don't know.
Hmm. What about the side characters?
I like the side characters fine. Like, I mean, you know,
there's not much to anyone in this movie, really.
Yeah, I mean, even her. There's a small little joke that actually reminds me of Rear Window with the friend who gets married, which is in Rear Window. There's, as he's looking out over his courtyard and seeing all these lives play out, there's one apartment where it's like at the very beginning of the movie, a husband enters with his wife, like carrying her over the threshold. It's like very clear, like newlyweds, and they pull down the blinds and it's like, ooh, first night. And then by the end of the movie, which is really only the course of a few days, he's like leaning out the window smoking and she's like nagging him. And it's, mm-hmm. It goes from like, to like hardcore, like newlywed status to like old married couple in 3 days. And there is a little hint of that joke with her friend.
Not everything is about you.
Yeah. And it reminded me of that. And that's kind of a funny trope to play with in a comedy about, you know, to have the, because you always get that like married couple in a rom-com that's been together forever, but you never see like the newlywed to that in a short mm-hmm. span of time, that joke. And so that was kind of a fun little bit. But yeah, honestly,
And this is kind of like with some other movies, there's like the closest we get to a happy relationship to look at is her parents.
Yeah.
But they're just, you know, she's nagging him about cholesterol and that's basically
they're very naggy.
Like we need someone to, you know, look up to maybe in this
maybe.
Movie.
Yeah. I mean, even June, who's like kind of one of the bigger side characters, like, I don't like that she comes in to this position and is like instantly like, yeah, I could sleep with my boss.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and not that is not a dig at her sexuality or her, but it's like the power imbalance. I hate that is such a thing in this movie for them.
Because like he has slept with all of these bimbo lawyers that he has hired. And it's like, dude, you can just date them. You don't need someone who's always accessible in your office because that's just creepy, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the, you know, that's button under the table creepy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and like, I mean, with the villains, we have like his brother who's partially, like he's the villain just because like he's less hot and also the one worrying about the business, which I'm like, capitalism is evil, but he's doing his job in the context of the job.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we have June, sort of the villain, not really, and they can't quite decide if she is a conniving bimbo or if it's just happenstance. Do you have a favorite character?
I mean, it's probably Sandra Bullock, I think.
Because it always is.
Yeah, and again, this is what I'm like noticing with her. Even when I feel like the movie is like meh, I enjoy her.
You would
her.
Have a drink with Sandra Bullock in
yeah,
this movie.
Yeah, I enjoy her in presence. Any movie. I enjoy what she's doing. And I like what Hugh Grant is doing with his character. Like, there's a playfulness to it that that is very Hugh Grant-y, which is kind of fun to watch, which is, you know, why he, you know, it's kind of what he banked on in the 90s and early 2000s.
And this is a very good version of sort of prime Hugh Grant, where he's not super fumbly and stuttery. He's just, you know, sort of a little self-deprecating in the good Hugh Grant way, but without it feeling overworked, which it can be sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I like both of the actors, and I think, again, I don't necessarily care about them romantically in this movie, but I like kind of both of their characters, if that mm-hmm. makes sense.
Do you have a favorite part?
I really like the part where they go to the community center and she is talking about growing up there on the roof, and they're like standing up there talking about this, and I was like, this, like, that's where I get that vibe of what you were saying earlier about New York and the power of it, and
that scene also shows that they're actually friends.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's like a weird thing where he's like, there's something off with this cake, and she's like, tofu, and I'm like, who puts tofu in a cake?
Law professors who worked in civil rights, apparently.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm trying to think of like my favorite part.
I also like the RV scene, even though it's super, like, schlocky,
cringy,
goofy
poop humor.
Yeah.
Well, I also like I, you know, I wish that he would like, I will give you an extra $100 if you turn on the radio really loudly right now.
Yes. Yeah. I'd be like, can everyone just start singing, please?
And it's done pretty well. Like with she you know, grabs a bunch of toilet paper to try to pull down the blinds because the guys in the car behind are staring at her. And then, because it says something about her as well, where she's like, she desperately needs to have a shit, but she's still like, oh no, I don't want to touch anything.
Yeah.
And it's funny.
And it doesn't veer as far as like something like Bridesmaids, and it's still kind of rooted in their characters a little bit. Although they do have this attempt in this movie to like get slapsticky in the middle for about 20 minutes. And this is like one of those scenes. She gets hit by like a car door and he's carrying her, and you know, and it never really fully works, but there's something just so friggin' weird about that scene that feels like it was in a different movie that I kind of appreciate.
It's just because this also comes right on the heel of the tennis game.
Yeah.
Or one of the, which is like, was this, you know, kind of like a dance scene? Like, we need to fill out an extra 4 minutes of this movie? Because it's a soup. Like, it's just like schmack, schmack, schmack. There's no music or anything even, I don't think. It's just like, okay, they're playing tennis. So maybe the tennis game is my least favorite part. I don't know what my favorite part is. It might be when they're on the boat, because she's just like drunk in a very...
Sliding down the steps and stuff.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, and she's wearing like this giant life jacket. Do you have a least favorite part?
I don't know. Like, again, I feel like this movie, I've said this about a number of movies, but I feel like I was forgetting this movie as it was happening. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think I have a least favorite part. Oh, no, I do. Absolutely, I do. Trump.
Absolutely.
Like, he showed up on screen, and both my wife and I went, and had this, like, vocal, visceral reaction. Because it has been nice to have him on mute for the last week. That's been real nice. So I did not like inviting him into my living room.
Yeah, that was because, again, like I thought like, oh, they just mentioned him because it would almost be weird if they didn't.
Right.
Like, developers, hotels.
New York real estate developers, of course. Yeah.
But then he's there. Yeah, no, I hear you. Definitely. So but how did we feel about the ending? We like the second ending more than the first ending.
Yeah, I mean, I also like the second ending more because it feels like it's their characters.
Mm-hmm.
The rom-com ending of this movie feels so cut and paste. It could have been out of any movie. You know, it's the I was wrong. I'm not going to do the thing that was going to hurt you that I said I was going to do. You made me see the error of my ways. I mean, you could reshape that in any number of ways, but there's nothing defining about it rooted in either of their characters. But I like that little tag because it is their characters.
Yeah, no, same. So this has a 42% fresh rating from critics. It has a 59% fresh rating from audiences and a 6.1 on IMDb. And I feel like that's basically where I am. Like, I would give it a 6. And I don't feel strongly enough about it to give it a lower or higher grade.
Yeah.
Like, it's meh. Like, yeah, done with that. What about you?
Yeah, I'd probably give it like a 5. Like, It passed through my television set into my eyeballs and my brain and then out of my brain in no particularly ordered or consequential fashion. So
it was basically just whipped cream instead of actual custard.
Yeah, yeah. I got a whipped cream movie to the face.
I mean, it sounds like we're in agreement that this movie can and should be fixed.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to go first?
Sure. Yeah. So I like watching it. I was like, what? So the stakes are the community center, and the difference is it's her kind of activism versus his real estate mogulness. And then you couple that with like personal character differences, which is she's more kind of type A, he's more type B. And I'm like, well, how can you just like accentuate these characteristics? And honestly, like, the only thing I could think of was you turn it, and maybe this is because we just watched, my wife and I just watched You've Got Mail, is you lean a little more into the You've Got Mail-ness of it, and it is like, she is, he's continuing to do this despite having feelings for her, and she is fighting him despite having feelings for him. And so you, like, you just have to up that tension somehow. I don't necessarily know how you do it, but I like, because even in You Got Mail, like, they become friends knowing that they're each other's enemies. Or knowing that he's the enemy, I should say, right? And that's kind of the same situation here. You've got this mogul who's coming in to take over this small, you know, community landmark. And yeah, I wanted to see more of their friendship. I wanted to see more of their rivalry, more of the moments where they, like, hate each other because of this. And I just didn't see it. It's almost like the community center becomes a non-issue, which, because he says he's not going to do it. But, like, the driving force of this movie, of her, the whole reason she's working for him, like, the stakes of the movie are gone as soon as she starts working for him. Mm-hmm. And so, to me, it's like, keep the stakes. That's how you fix it. You keep the stakes.
Like, he has promised that, but has to keep fighting with his brother all throughout the movie.
Like,
he has to actually try to save the community center from his own company, sort of.
Right, something like that. Yeah, you know, or he's, like, being bullied into it by donors and or, you know, by the CEO or the board or whatever.
Or because Trump is making him feel like a little man, so he has to out-Trump him.
Yeah, Trump's giving him a petty juvenile nickname. Yeah, I don't know. I just, there are no stakes in this.
Yeah, you know, I agree that, but, you know, I already said, like, we need more friendship, but I realized we also need more redemption for him than just him saying, like, oops, I was bad. Like, we need some sort of, because it's really easy to say, oh, I'm gonna change, and it's also really easy to be like, I'm not gonna tear down the community center because I left the company, which is like, and how does that mean you've saved it? The company,
right,
can now
the company can
ignore
still
you.
Come in and do that.
But so, you know, that he needs to show that more. And I was like, well, wouldn't it make sense for them to just, like, use his money, because he's not poor, no, like, they just use his money and her passion to set up, like, a really good charity organization or a local organization, and then June could come work for them, because I want her to not come out as I want her to not come off as this conniving gold digger.
Yeah,
they could just be like, you know, they both were just, like, stressed about a weird situation and overinterpreted what the other person were doing, but she's super competent and they become friends and she comes to work for the new place because she cares about community, as evidenced in the first interview. But then when you were talking about stakes, it also made me think a really funny fix, because when you said that she's type A, he's type B because he's never had to do anything for himself.
Yeah.
Like, everyone else plans everything for him, cleans up his messes, all that stuff. And I was like, so what if trading places? What if he loses his money and has to try to live a life? But that was, a belated, quick, off-the-cuff thought. But that's a very different movie. But, like, just exploring of the, is he a type B or is he the 1%?
Yeah. Yeah. I like that idea, too, of like, the redemption being part of the story.
Mm-hmm. Because if someone was just like, okay, so he's been this sort of, you know, flirty douchebag basically his whole life, and then he's like, no, I'm sorry, because I like you, and I would be like, I'm gonna need some receipts. I need to, you know, actually, you know, actions, not words. All right, I think we got it up to 7. I don't know. Can we make it weird? Because for me, because Trump is in this, my mind went Trump, Biff, time travel.
Okay.
Because I was like, so what their organization does is they figure out time travel so that they can save a bunch of historic buildings. And then I was like, they save them using the shrink ray from Ant-Man. So they shrink all these buildings and then they move them to somewhere else where they're not going to be threatened by a condo. And then suddenly in my head, it was like one of those weird fake ghost towns, either in, like, Universal Studios or just, like, somewhere out in the desert. They just put all of these amazing historic buildings, maybe just, like, upstate New York, so that they're still there. But they just travel around the country, going back in time, shrinking buildings, and then moving them to somewhere where they can still be saved and not even have to worry about them being torn down if somebody else takes over the company or you need more condos. So that is my make it weird.
That's awesome. I like that. I like it because it's just so, it's so wacky. Mine is much less wacky. Mine is during the motorhome scene, they end up in this motorhome with this family. And
do they travel the country? Do they travel the country with the family?
Of course they travel the country. So yes, they travel the country, and this is how you get Hugh Grant's kind of redemption a little bit, is because he sees, like, because this family is ostensibly very poor. Mm-hmm. And again, in this scene, there is like a weird moment where you hear her like moaning in the bathroom, and the mom's like, "Come here, kids." She like holds them for safety. But you get this, like, they end up traveling with this family. But yeah, I just like, I got this idea of like, that was kind of some of the most fun I had in the movie was that scene. And then I was like, what if we just stay here? They're in the car. They're in the RV. The traffic starts moving. They go. Their car is getting towed. And why not just keep going? Cause like,
and then you would also, instead of, cause you get a really funny contrast there where he's like, "I'm calling for a lift," and a helicopter actually shows up, and it would be like, maybe even for some, like we combine it a little, and maybe he loses all his money. Like he gets a phone call while he's in the RV, and it's like, oh no, somebody stole everything. And so he can't fix the situation. He can't buy everybody a bigger RV. He can't.
Right.
He's just like, all right, we have to save the community center by doing circus all over the country. I don't know.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know what it is, but like, yeah, they just travel the country, and he uses his kind of real estate mogul expertise. She uses her law expertise, and it becomes like a little bit of like a traveling partnership where they eventually, obviously, because it's a movie about New York, they have to make it back to New York. But when they do, they've learned all these great lessons. They've fallen in love and blah, blah, blah.
And they
blah,
know
blah.
That they love New York because they've seen everything else.
Right. And then they save the community center at the end using everything they've learned.
I like it.
Yeah. Wholesome.
Did we learn anything from this movie aside from the fact that it will be quite a long time before you can see Trump and not recoil?
That is literally the thing that like it dawned on me, because you know, he's always in the news. He's always on Twitter. But like, weirdly, with him not being on Twitter, there's been this kind of like Trump-shaped void a little bit. And to have him back suddenly was really like jarring. And
where you're like, I was intentionally not staring into the void.
Yeah.
I would appreciate the void not staring back at me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I learned is. It is going to be a visceral reaction for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it's not going to be funny. Like you're not going to be like, haha, joke about how Reagan was an actor. No,
no,
it's not. No,
no.
Next week we can talk about who's the boss, because next week we're talking about The Proposal, where Sandra Bullock gets to be the boss.
Yeah.
You can find our show notes at theincomparable.com chick flick fix. You can email us at chickflickfix@gmail.com. Again, if you're afraid to share on social media your feelings about this movie, but we are Chick Flick Fix on the social medias. We'll be back next week. Say goodbye, AJ.
Goodbye, AJ.